Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Gaver Tully is an educator who believes that we're taking such terrific care of our kids that we're actually putting them in danger these days. He contends that in protecting our kids from the kinds of real-life experiments that we experienced perhaps as children, that our children are facing greater perils in their lives because they're unprepared to recognise danger when it comes. His book, 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Children Do, along with his Tinkering School Camps, are a hit in the US. And when we chatted with Gaver, we began with why it is that we as a generation of parents are so afraid for our kids.
Well, Duane, I think, you know, if we have to point the finger somewhere, I think we can start to point it at how the news media started to report children's accidents. And how that led to parents being very afraid that their children would be injured.
Gaver, we're going to explore your tinkering camps in a moment, which sound a lot like Scout or Girl Guide camps with extra fun stuff. But first, let's explore your book, 50 Dangerous Things, built on the premise that kids remember life lessons when there's a chance they could fail, when they actually are in some kind of jeopardy. Just 50?
You know, I made a list of almost 120 and then worked with my wife, she was my editor on that book, to pare it down to about 60 that we tried out with families. And then from that, we boiled it down to 50, which were the 50 most sort of simultaneously exciting to the children or the families and sort of doable in a lot of different contexts, whether you were rural or urban or, you know, living in an apartment in New York City. It was, we wanted to make sure that there was something in there for everybody.
Gaver, is it your contention that if we don't teach our kids to recognize danger, that they'll go ahead and explore it anyway, and we just may not be there to help them out of it if things get sticky?
Yeah, you know, I think that if we don't give, and the research shows this, if we don't give children an opportunity to learn to recognize and mitigate risk, and to practice doing that, and yes, they're going to get some bumps and scrapes and, you know, maybe they'll cut themselves. That's what Band-Aids are for. The real tragedy is when those children grow up and the very first time they have their apartment, they end up in the emergency room because they cut themselves while trying to prepare vegetables. It's a quite common phenomenon on college campuses in the emergency services ward for them to have kids who it's their first time they've had an apartment, and of course they've cut themselves because they've never cooked for themselves before, or they create kitchen fires. All of that is about those kids growing up without ever having had to assess a situation and decide how to approach it, and assuming that everything has been safe up till now, this must be safe too. You have to, when you look at children today, you have to keep in mind that you're looking at one or two generations back before you get to people who had a working garage with tools and materials lying around.
A lawnmower that you could take apart on a Sunday.
Exactly so, exactly. The real tragedy, I think, is that we've moved so far generationally that kids are being raised by parents who themselves are very nervous about using tools or how to use them, and to the point where a lot of them are even uncomfortable using a hammer and a nail to hang a picture frame. It's difficult for that parent to suddenly become comfortable and give their child a pocket knife or let them play with fire when they themselves don't have comfort with that tool. So I created Tinkering School as a place where nervous parents could send their kids to have those experiences and know that, you know, I would be there looking after them.
So when kids arrive at tinkering camp, how do you lay out the rules, the boundaries?
Yeah, well, the first thing that kids realize when they come to tinkering school is that they're suddenly way more responsible for themselves than they ever have been. We show them around the tinkering school shop, and we teach them the proper use of each tool and give them guidance about how and when to use the tools, and then suddenly we turn our backs on them, and they're in the shop with the tools and the materials, realizing that the only person who's really going to keep them from being injured is themselves. And so we see them step up almost immediately. Usually by day two, we have a relationship with the kids where we can trust them to use the shop wisely. Even for the children whose parents sent along a little special note saying, look out for Timmy because he sometimes has poor impulse control. Well, we've discovered if you put Timmy in an environment where he can really hurt himself and then let him know that nobody's looking out for him, then Timmy will step up too.
He'll develop impulse control.
Yes, exactly. And Tinkering School, according to our insurance company, has a lower injury rate than a local chess camp.
Is that right?
Yeah. And our kids are out there with tools, and they're building things and little carts, and they're getting in and driving them downhill. And we just recently qualified, you know, for a sort of discount in our insurance because we had a track record that showed kids weren't being harmed. So I think that often the biggest impact of Tinkering School is that the children get home, and thanks to the daily blog that shows what they did, they can show their parents how responsible they were, kind of demonstrate that, and it changes the relationship between parent and child.
Because at the heart of it, the simple message here is that kids are experiential.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They learn from doing, and when they get a chance to learn that way, the lessons they learn stay forever. We don't have any problems with retention. Even for the kids who 6 years ago built a boat, they remember more from the boat building and the discussions around the physics of the boat, including some very deep engineering analysis. Those kids from 6 years ago are able to regurgitate all of that information and more because they applied it to the actual building of a boat.
Where if you sat them down in a classroom and tried to teach them about Archimedes, for instance, you'd stand no chance.
Yeah, and 6 years later, they don't even remember who Archimedes was.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of your other goals with Tinkering Camp?
Well, I'll be the first to admit that I have a little bit of a subversive agenda, which is that kids might be so excited by how they learn at Tinkering School that then when they get back to their regular schools, they're talking to their teachers and their parents about how school could be more engaging and more meaningful. And we've seen some of our kids being the center of change at their school to bring shop class back or afternoon hands-on learning blocks and things like that, and engaging proactively with their teachers and administration.
Gaver, it seems you're a bit of an education revolutionary, a mountain climber, for the want of a better term. Tell us about Brightworks School. Share a little of the way you're revolutionizing the education system there.
Well, Brightworks is an experiment in what would school be like in kindergarten through 12th grade if it was based on the kinds of experiences that you had in a program like Tinkering School. What if it really asked the question, what if school was more like summer camp?
You're not merely tinkering around the edges here, though, Gaver. You've taken out grades and even what we know as the traditional year class system.
We don't sort of track the children by their age so much by what kind of challenge are they ready to take on. And we cluster those kids together. So you see in each of our, what you would call a class, you see a mixed age group of children who are all kind of ready to take on the same intellectual and social challenges. Adults don't have their days divided into 45-minute periods. They go to work and they work until their next meeting, and then they do their meeting and they go back to work again. At their desks or something like that. And so our kids have a tendency to work all day or a large portion of the day on their projects, and their ability to do that grows as they grow.
How then do kids get access to Stanford or Yale to study engineering or medicine?
Yeah. Well, luckily, Stanford, for example, has opened up the new admissions pathway starting last year for those kids coming out of maybe homeschooling situations, alternative schools like ours, or have very hybrid educations because their parents were in the military and moved around or something like that, there is a growing population of kids who are very interesting to universities who have these unique educational backgrounds and need a different pathway into the university because they're not coming in with a grade point average. And Stanford, Carnegie Mellon, MIT, these leaders in the education world are starting to show the way by opening up new admissions pathways. And I think we're going to see all of the schools, at least in the United States, start to recognize this because these kids are coming in capable. They don't need to be taught how to knuckle down and get work done. They've been getting work done for the last 10 years of their lives. So,
have you seen kids transition from the Brightworks school into tertiary education and then careers afterwards?
Well, that's an interesting question because our school is only 4 years old.
Okay.
We're in our fourth year right now and haven't graduated anybody yet. But I will tell you that we have a few students who went through tinkering school who've gone to 7 or more years of tinkering school, and those students are in college now, and I'm in contact with them because, you know, I've known them for so long. Mm. And what we're hearing from their professors is that these students are an asset in the university setting. They model a behavior for other students that can't be taught by a professor. It's that can-do attitude, that notion that every problem is interesting and is worth like looking at and poking at instead of just giving up, and that tacit or innate sense that they can solve anything, that there's a solution and it can be found out. And those kids are doing very well in school, and I have no doubt that Brightworks is going to see that phenomenon as well.
Gabe Vitale, I know that parents here in Australia aren't all that different from parents in the US, and we just want our kids to love learning, to make it a lifelong passion. And it sounds like you're well down that path, and I'd like to think that similar programs like yours and your tinkering camps would have a place here in Australia. Thanks for your time and for joining us in Open House.
Thank you. And we'll support anybody who wants to start one down there.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.